Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
We're here today with Dick Kahn. And Dick has wrote the book, The Occult Mind, Investigation of Occult Realities Using the Spirit Molecule, or DMT. And Dick, let me tell you something. I've done a lot of drugs in my life, right? But I have not done the amount of drugs. I'm an ex-raver, so I come very much from the rave scene. I was an ecstasy-eating, coke-snorting, LSD munching lunatic. And it ended in a huge addiction, turning my life around, getting into trouble in my life, turning my life around, which eventually led me into the field of human development. That's what we do here. So this is why I wanted to talk to yourself. Like, you've done over 600 DMT trips, I suppose you would call them. Obviously on the pursuit of something. And that's where we want to head. So can you tell us a little bit
about
yourself?
Before you tell us anything about yourself, Dick, I have to interrupt because we like to start every podcast with a little song. And I don't know whether you have a favourite song in mind at the moment that Mitch can sing or that you might want to sing or what else? Or something that we like to put people on the spot as well and see what they come up with.
You've put me right on the spot and the first thing that comes to mind is Yellow Submarine.
Oh, awesome.
We all live
in a yellow submarine.
That's good. That's awesome. Love it.
It's funny. I'm no X Factor winner, but yeah. No,
you did really good. It's funny. Only 2 years ago, we were up in the ashram where the Beatles last hung out together, and it was the last time they were ever together outside of the country, where they wrote Yellow Submarine when they were on that, you know, that psychedelic trip of their own, you know?
Amazing.
Perfect for what we're talking about, isn't it?
Yeah.
So how about, Dick, you can give us a little bit of background, our listeners a bit of background about who you are and...
Yeah, sure. Well, let me say, I just heard Mitch say he's an ex-raver. Yes. I'm also an ex-raver. I'm a family man now. My raving days are long gone. I would say my dancing days are long gone, but I still have some ecstasy in my medicine box. I maintain. Look, I'm just a regular guy. I'm a family man. I've got a full time job. I've got two boys, 12 and 13. I've got a lovely wife. Yeah. You know, I've wrote a couple of books about DMT. Some people tend to treat you a little bit differently, put you on a pedestal. I'm not into that. Yeah. I'm just the same as the people smoking DMT, taking ayahuasca. It's just I've decided to invest my energies in writing books. Doesn't make me any different. Right. So honestly, just a regular guy, but really fell head over heels in not love, but just mad curiosity for the DMT experience. After first experiencing it, it was like, wow. Right. I mean, taking that back, you know, I saw Rick Strassman's The Spirit Molecule and it just blew me away. You know, it took me back to my childhood where I, you know, as a regular childhood, I'd had a couple of unusual experiences and it just took me back there and I knew I had to try it and I tried it. And yeah, I mean, it did change my life. I put it on the record before, but after about 50 experiences, I decided to get serious about it and start really investigating it. And I stopped drinking. I stopped drinking alcohol, and I stopped masturbating. I got this kind of like habit from my early adulthood, and it kind of like, you know, it's like I couldn't shake it off, you know. But eventually, you know, I decided it was incompatible with the seriousness with which I wanted to invest in my research. So, I've shook it off and I've not returned to either drink or, you know, masturbation.
I'm not going to masturbate this morning, but I got to go and do some DMT.
I've at last matured my emotional intelligence. It took ages. It took DMT for me to mature my emotional intelligence.
Well, so, it's funny because they say, you know, When we throw sperm around, we throw life around. You know, it's like reality. You're very disrespectful of life when you're doing it. Or it can be. But I know, Dick, my first experience of LSD and my first experience of LSD, I remember a buddy of mine gave me an LSD trip and I had a little penguin on it. And he got it and he stuck it under his eyelid. And he said to me, "No, don't do that. Just stick it under your tongue." So I stuck it under my tongue. And I remember walking into this nightclub. And it was like for the first time in my life, I had this experience of not being myself and my thoughts and who I was. But I later in life realized I was experiencing another realm of consciousness where for 18 years I thought there was only one. And it was like my mind just went poof. And the next day I was like, "Oh my God, everybody needs to do this. We should be giving this to presidents. We should be giving this to prime ministers. Every fucker needs to understand that, you know, the cosmic joke." And that was really my beginning. So was it the same with you, Dick, with taking DMT?
Mitch, exactly the same, minus the nightclub. I don't know how you managed the nightclub. I got to say, maybe we'll get onto it, but when we first started taking acid, when we were like 18, 19, exactly the same, you know, next day, why isn't the world up experiencing this? The world needs to experience this.
Yeah.
I mean, just amazing. I mean, just quickly, the one story where I did try acid in it's like a nightclub, a pub, and I went with my cousin and we got some acid, which I didn't know, it was a little bit dodgy. And we took this acid and my cousin's like, "Did you know everybody's looking at you?" I was like, "No, I thought everybody was looking at me, but I was like trying not to like admit to it." She said, "Yeah, everybody's looking at you." I was like, why is everybody looking at you?" She says, "Because your face is purple." And I chanced to look in a mirror and I look like a beetroot. And I was like, "Oh, shit." I was able to manage it without caving in, why is the world up experiencing good acid?
How long ago was your first experience of the DMT, and why did you start, like what drew you to it, what was drawing you to it?
Well, I'm in my late 40s now. I would say it was when I was 40, early 40s, about 40, and as I say, it was I'd left my raving days behind me. I was a family man, I was married. I'd given up smoking weed after, I don't know, 20-year habit with pot and weed. I'd given that up. I was kind of like itchy to do something.
What's the next one?
Yeah, I was like, I was using research chemicals, which you could buy legally online, like analogues of MDMA and different things, you know, usually keep you awake for a day or two. And, you know, because I was up all night, I was watching YouTube and chanced upon the Spirit Molecule documentary. I seem to remember reading a little clip about it in a newspaper a year or two before, but seeing the documentary blew my mind, and I knew I was just full of goosebumps, and I knew I have to try that. I mean, you know, I've never injected drugs. That's not for me, he says. I have since injected DMT intramuscularly, but at the time I was like, I got to try. I didn't even know you could smoke it. I was just like, I got to try it. And then went on for months and months doing online research, found you could smoke it, acquired some back, kept doing my research, and eventually I extracted my own DMT and I was like, yes!
When you say you extracted your own DMT, what do you mean? What do you mean?
So I've never bought DMT. I mean, it's I think same in England, Australia, it's still highly illegal. Yeah. So I bought some root back, Mimosa hostilis root back, which was readily available online, still is readily available online. And I followed one tech, which was long and complicated, and it failed me. And then when I got to the bottom of the tech, it said, NB, don't use this tech. It's too long and complicated and probably won't work. I was like, damn it. So I tried another tech and that worked. And it's a very simple procedure. You know, it's a couple of aggressive chemicals involved, so safety precautions are essential, but it's no more difficult than baking a cake, if not simpler.
Wow. And then, can you tell me about your first experience?
I was gonna ask
and then why it would drive you to do it 600 times. And then and while we're on that, how were you able to document stuff if you were Ben?
Right. So first of all, I've extracted it. And I don't know, there's a certain way you smoke it. You actually need the vapor. So I tried to smoke it in a test tube and I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I'd done all the research by how to, you know, smoke it. So first two or three times failed and I had to extract some more DMT and that done. It's like in my days of experiencing pot for the first time where you get an old aluminium drinks can and you pin it with a needle and you put some on and get a flame. And that was my first time and it was with it was in this room. And my wife was overlooking me and it was a sunny Saturday morning and, you know, I just got this lungful and it just very quickly amplified a sound in my head, this high-pitched sound. And it was just so, it's just incredible to hear that and feel that in the midst of your head. And the room just became crystal clear and the dimples on the decoration on the ceiling all became radiant in spectral colours. It was just magical. And my wife said, right, you've experienced it now. Leave it alone. I was like, no way. I mean, I know I'd only had a little bit, but its power, its potency, wow, it just blew me away. And then second time, I dispensed with my wife, so to speak. I smoked, it was about 15 milligram in the bedroom filled with this energy. And then it was daylight conditions, sunlight. And then projected on the ceiling was this like big cinemagraphic movie reel of me, my wife, my children all walking, holding hands. It was just a joyous scene. I mean, I saw that. I couldn't explain how it got there, but I don't know. It was just lovely. It was beautiful. And it was like, why would I not want to go back? So I go back, increasing the doses time and time again. And it was beautiful. It seemed like, you know, like I was going to another world, another realm, peopled with human looking beings, all kind of impossible looking artifacts and wondrous things. And I couldn't explain where it was or how I was getting there. And it was on that basis that I set out to do my research and start documenting my experiences with no intention to write a book. And I found that, you know, I was researching in a small landing area, so I found comfortably 25 milligrams was breaking me through in that small location. And then start to ask questions, well, it looks like I'm going somewhere, so how do I get halfway there? And I started to toy about with smaller doses. And the experience was just really intriguing, you know, something. I'd smoke like 2 milligram. You feel something, nothing's happening. Smoke like 5 milligram. You feel something, but it's not happening. Smoke 7 milligram. And it's like you sense that something's there. And then you feel like you've pissed your pants. And you're like, what? And, you know, it's like something. And then you feel something's laughing at you. Something's like, you know, you sense there. It's like, and you feel in your pants and they're dry, like, something's laughing at me. Something's, you know. So it's like developed from that and then started to increase doses and, yeah, it just became magic. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I have had experiences where you come out of it and you're like, what the hell just happened? You can't document it.
Right.
But, you know, others, I've documented as much as I can remember without embellishing the truth.
So what do you feel were chasing? What do you like, they call it the God particle, you know, what do you feel you were hacking reality, hacking consciousness? What do you feel you were chasing?
So I didn't know at the time, but through repeated experiences it became apparent that those visions of that realm, those human-like entities, it became apparent that they were being imposed upon my perception by something from hidden nature. I wouldn't say God. I would just say, I mean, I've read a lot of esoteric and occult texts not in any dark way, but just the philosophy behind it that talk about realms with unseen realms populated with a whole host of different beings. And I think I strongly believe I'm tapping into that. And whilst I'm not going there, something from that realm typically manifests in my setting and imposes very powerfully upon my perceptions temporarily. And yeah, you see all kinds of wonderful things.
So are you getting information? Do you feel that whatever these beings are, they know that you're there? Are they imparting anything onto you? Or is it just you're going there and going, well, okay, well, I'm here, you're there, we're together in this space?
So I would say the experience is just so devastatingly uncommon that the experience itself is the impartation of information. You are seeing something that you could not previously imagine. You know, you're looking at something and you are aghast with astonishment. You just cannot believe what you're seeing. So it's not like they're telling me, okay, learn this, or we're going to tell you this. But there is a transference. It's more like a thought transference, you know, like a more psychic communications, like images will be imparted into your mind.
Can you give us an example of that, like of something that you couldn't imagine or you couldn't like?
It's really difficult because I can't even describe it now, but right. Early on in my research, I would smoke it. And I'll give you an example. I smoked it in the landing and it looks like I'm in this place. You know, I'm still in my landing, but I'm saying something has engulfed me within its mind and it's imposing visually upon me. And there's this ringmaster there from like a circus. He looks like the guy on Monopoly, that, you know, the motif for Monopoly.
Yeah. Yep.
And he's showing me all these things and they're just amazing. And he's like, oh, you like that, do you? He's not saying it, but I can sense he's saying, you like that, do you? Look at this. And I look at that. And it's just blowing my mind, and he knows it, and he sees it, and he says, right, you like that? Now look at this. And it's just taking my astonishment higher and higher and higher. And it gets to the point where, honestly, it's enough. I have to look, and I'm embarrassed. Wow. I have to look away because my astonishment feels like it's just going to shatter.
Wow.
And I'm like, whoa, enough. But I couldn't tell you what he's showing me because he's just... it's just impossible to describe.
Wow. Right. Wow. And it's funny how, you know, we can sit here and relate to that because, you know, I wonder if there's a part of us is already there and it's just, you know, showing us potential, or it's showing us potential realities, and how, you know, we're astonished. I wonder if it's we're astonished because we're familiar, or we're astonished because... it's just so beautiful, or?
I think you're onto the right tracks. I mean, I'm doing a lot of book research, trying to figure out what these entities are from hidden nature. And I'm kind of focusing on these devas, D-E-V-A, from Buddhism, Hinduism, occult texts. And they're like our builders. They're the builders of forms.
Yeah.
And that does make sense, because sometimes you smoke it and you feel like, it's already within you, but also without you. And right. They seem to have, from my experiences, a complete working knowledge of human physiology, human psyche, and that kind of makes sense to me.
Hmm. Have you experienced? Sorry, Mel.
No. You ask your question.
Have you experienced any dark experiences? Do you feel it's being gentle with you? Has it ever, you know, the way, have you done ayahuasca?
Yes, I've done, I think I've done about 7 drinks over 2 retreats.
Okay, so with ayahuasca, like ayahuasca can kick the shit out of you if it wants to, and then...
I had an intense experience. I mean, it was amazing, but it was, I didn't expect that from ayahuasca. It was intense.
Yeah. Do you feel with DMT it's gentler with you? Do you feel it's aware that you're in there? Like, is it, or have you had some dark experiences?
So out of hundreds of experiences, I've had three that really stand out as being challenging. I won't say bad trips, but challenging. I do think, I find DMT obviously much stronger than ayahuasca as an experience. Some people have said the molecule has been kind to me, and I suspect it has to a degree. And I think that's largely because of maybe my individual approach to it. I think if you approach DMT with a mindset of, oh, yeah, let me see what all this is about, it's going to slap you. But yeah. I'm like, I don't know. I think if you go in and you have that respectful curiosity tinged with fear, you're probably going to be okay. Yeah. So out of hundreds of experiences, I've had three that really stood out as being very challenging. And first one was smoked it in the bedroom, and the bedroom filled with this entity. You can see its psycho spiritual substance, and it felt like it could just snuff me out on a whim, like I was nothing, and I was appealing to it. It just wasn't interested in anything I said, and this like spiral form came out of its midst, and it's spiraling down towards my solar plexus, and it placed itself over there where my heart is, and I knew this being could just push my soul out of my body like it was nothing, and I was terrified. Wow. And yeah, I eventually was so scared, I jumped up, and amazingly, as soon as I jumped up, the room was just empty. The thing had gone.
Wow.
And then I've had an experience where after a while, after the visual experiences, these entities began to operate invasively within me. A portion would be within my physiology, operating in a quasi-physical manner. I know it sounds bizarre.
Afterwards?
I would smoke it. No, within the experience.
Okay.
So I would smoke it. I can feel the entity filling the room. I can feel the entity within my my trachea, my windpipe. And like a minute or two passes, I'm like, nothing's happening. And then slowly it starts to restrict my airflow within my windpipe very slowly. So my breathing's starting to become labored, and I'm home alone. I'm like, well, this is getting interesting. And it's now getting to the point where I'm wheezing. And then it's quickly getting to the point where I'm starting to have misgivings about what I'm doing, and thinking, if I die, nobody's going to know why I've died,
right?
You know, and I was on the verge of panic. And I mean, panic in a human being, it's not a pretty thing. No. And I was close to freaking out. And the moment, just the moment before I submitted to panic, it went.
Wow.
And I was just on my own. It was like, and then, you know, I mean, that kind of experience probably put a lot of people off. But for me, the proper response had to be when I composed myself is, oh, you got me so good. You got me so good. Oh, right, and it did. It was like, oh, my God, you know.
Yeah.
I was fearful for my death. And that's the lesson, because after that, you feel not just alive, but twice alive. Right. Like, gee, yeah. Wow, what was that? Yeah. And then if you want to know the last one, it was a Saturday. No intention, smoke DMT. It was foggy. The air was still. And I don't know, I think I was being subliminally coaxed into smoking DMT. And I said, okay, I'll just smoke 15 milligrams, no problem. I went outside, laid in the garden. It's foggy, it's cloudy, it's not very nice. And I smoked this 15 milligram. Straight away, something's there, like it's been waiting for me. It comes down. It's very unusual. I've never seen anything like it. It's like disc-shaped, maybe about 2 meters wide. It's like composed of these strange building blocks. Very quickly, it shoves something into my head. It does something in my brain. I can feel it. And then it just shoots off. And I feel like I've just been mugged, psychically
wow.
mugged. And I,
wow.
for the next 2 or 3 hours, I was just, what's it done?
Wow.
What's it done to me? And, you know, after a while, you compose yourself and, you know, eventually say, those 2 to 3 hours of angst, that's what it did to me. It imposed upon me in such a dark manner as to put me out of sorts for 2 to 3 hours.
Wow.
At least I hope that's what
it was.
It was.
So, like, listening to this, right, and I haven't had Mitch's past experience with drugs. You know, I've never experienced LSD. With, you know, listening to this from an outsider's perspective, firstly, the difference between what it sounds like, the difference between DMT and something like LSD, because you haven't done DMT, right?
No.
The difference between LSD and DMT, it'd be interesting. I want to know kind of what it is and why, like, it seems like there's this entity being this feeling of an outside force of some sort that I don't hear you talk or anybody talk about when they talk about LSD. Is that correct? Would that be correct?
So it's a good question. Before I answer, let me just say to, you know, listeners, I'm conscious I've just relayed three very dark episodes,
yes.
But
yeah.
I tell you what, the other hundreds are beautiful, yeah. Entertaining beyond compare. So, you know, I hope I've not put anybody off. But yeah, great question. I mean, I tried LSD again for the first time in 20 years, I think it was last year, and it was beautiful, and it does impose or invoke or manifest this universal oneness within you. And I don't know, I feel it's kind of touching on some kind of divinity within us that's also without us. Mm. And I find with DMT, it's the same, but it's just dialed up much, much more.
So it's more intense.
It's more intense. So these, if they are divas that are interacting with me, I say they're, divine or semi-divine beings. And yeah, I mean, you come out of those experiences. I've had experiences which have been so intense. You feel like the creator of the universe should be mindful of what's happening. You know, the experience feels more like an event than an experience. And that sort of oneness with universal divinity, I mean, it's just makes your heart cry. It's right. Just unbelievable, you know, life changing.
Mm. So I kind of feel like what's the outcome that you're looking for, or what are you searching for, or what is anybody searching for in order to do in doing what you're doing, you know, in accessing that? Are you looking to access something particular or different every single time, or are you just looking to see what happens, or like, what's the purpose of it, I suppose?
That's a great question. And what I've not touched on is so much as my childhood. And as I say, my childhood, I had a few unusual experiences. I had classic out-of-body experiences maybe three or four times. I sensed the presence of another. My mum would typically leave me in the lounge. She'd go somewhere. And as soon as she'd gone, I could sense there was something there. I couldn't see it, but I could sense it was watching me. And in addition to that, a real big part of my life, and especially my childhood, was a ringing sound, like a tinnitus, it's called in the West, in my head. I mean, I've always had that. I have it now. But as a child, it was really prominent, especially when I went to bed at night. And nobody ever spoke about that, and I didn't know why. And it wasn't until like 40 years later when I smoked DMT. And it amplifies that sound that's been such a big part of my childhood. And I think that's one of the reasons why I fell in love with it so much. And to get to your question now, Mills, it was those experiences with those spirits from hidden nature, whatever they are, it kind of reassured me that I knew all along, even as a child, that there was something else. There was something really important that people were not talking about. And it is that spiritual other, the reality of it. Mm-hmm. That, so DMT confirmed that to me. And if I'm chasing anything, I guess I'm just trying to promote that argument through my research and through my books.
Mm. I think, you know, when You know, I remember when I was a kid, I used to think that everybody else was a robot and I wasn't. And I used to hide behind furniture and I'd leap out and want to catch them, you know. And I think that as a kid, I kind of felt, and I've always known it, that I was born and raised in a Catholic religion background, and I never believed any of it. I was like, this is fucking nonsense. Like, I mean, honestly, what is going on here? Because I just saw the contradiction in it all. So I always knew there was something much greater going on. I think the first time I did LSD, it really vilified and verified that, you know, how I see things is very ignorant. And what we are is way more than what this physical form or this physical body actually is. So I went from the, you know, where you know, in the physical form, the outward worship of a god or a deity or a religion is a very outer experience, where, you know, where in spirituality, it's a very inner experience. And my first experience of LSD was a very deep spiritual experience, and it was tribal, and it was dance, and it was music. And when I came outside, everything was moving and everything was melting. And I was, as much as I can see this pen in my hand right now, this pen was not a pen. It was malleable. It moved. And I was as certain that it was moving and it was malleable as it was solid. So it really, really opened my mind. And that was, I had an insatiable appetite there. Not just to understand what had happened with the drug, but also to understand, you know, ancient mysticism and reality and who we are, and get away from the ignorance and be open to the divine amount of knowledge that is perhaps out there that we're only just starting to scratch back at now, you know. And we're seeing now in Silicon Valley, where there's microdosing going on, you know, we're looking at the heads of Google taking their GM into
Burning Man
to watch how he behaves with teams, you know. What, so they're you know, we're hacking back in again, you know. The consciousness movement is no longer an underground thing. And we were talking about this earlier. You were saying to me, is that only happening because you're in that realm right now and you're doing ayahuasca and you're starting to experiment again?
It's been going on for a long time.
It's been going on. I mean, the use of plant life to be able to access consciousness goes right back to when we were apes, you know, picking up mushrooms because we were fucking hungry, and then having this mind-opening experience as an ape going, holy shit, you know. So I think that the plant is a medicine, you know, and I think that it has healing properties for us. It has something for it to tell us, you know.
It feels just amazing how it's been hidden or secret or so largely unknown. I mean, you know, the experiences are magical. How can that have been hidden for so long?
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, Graham, you follow Graham Hancock or listen to any Graham Hancock?
Yes.
So Graham, in a great interview, you know, has spoken very openly about the criminalization of these medicines, which, you know, had such extraordinary healing properties because, you know, big pharma, blah, 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 large corporate companies were not able to control it and they wanted to be able to access it, but they were cutting us off from the source of what we actually were, you know. Now, because they're able to cash in on it, we're seeing that, you know, the use of medicinal marijuana is, you know, Australia's destined to become the largest producer of medicinal marijuana on the planet. You know, that's what they're saying. But we are definitely heading back down that road. And I think people like yourself are really the new pioneers of being able to open and open up and speak freely about, hey, look, I've done this. I've done it a lot. You know, I mean, you seem like a normal person, like anybody else. And I don't live in your living room. It was when he pulled the disguise out. That's when I was like, but you know what I mean? You know what I mean? It's like normal people are starting to question things, and this is a quick way to be able to access it. Can I ask you another question though? Do you think it's made you a better human?
Absolutely.
How?
I mean, how? So as I said, I stopped drinking. I mean, it wasn't like I'd never been a big drinker anyway, you know, went years without drinking. I just found it incompatible. So it's not like drinking was a problem. Masturbation, I've covered, it helped me stop with that. And I find because of that, I did mature emotionally, my emotional intelligence, which probably had been lacking throughout my early and mid-adulthood, was probably a little bit immature. So it helped me mature emotionally. It's made me far more mindful of my interactions with people I know and love and strangers. It's made me far more conscious of the influences that I allow to work on my psyche. Mm-hmm. So what I will watch on TV, I mean, I've pretty much given up with TV. You know, what I will watch, what media I'll watch, what books I read. It's made me far more patient. I have to admit, my wife's helped me with that as well, but far more patient. I'm not sat here pretending it's got rid of the dark side of my psyche that we all have. I'm not saying it's got rid of that, but I think it's enabled me to face up to it in all its sort of brutal ugliness and kind of like say, well, okay, yeah, all right, it's there. And you know, we've all got it, and it's how you deal with it that maybe defines your character.
Yeah.
So I really like that it's made you recognise what you allow in. I think that's important. How do you feel about, or what would you say to, like, I've heard very conflicting things, you know. I know lay people out there who haven't heard anything or are unexposed to using plants as medicine like we're talking mm-hmm. about would you know, Some of them would see it as a, like, that where people are doing it as a recreational thing, you know, just to get high or whatever.
Or we're promoting that.
Do you think that this is something that everybody should do or try, and why?
Good question.
It's a good question. You know, I mean,
I'm with the good questions, guys.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a great conversation, but this is not a conversation I can have with work colleagues. I mean, nobody at work knows that I'm Dick Khan.
Really?
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's hence what I thought it were. Right. I would have needed to disguise if this was video, but I don't know. I mean, when I have had conversations with drugs in the past about some colleagues, it's just, I don't think it's for them. They're like, yeah, no. Yeah. I think some people, if you feel it's calling your name, like I felt it was calling my name, then it's for you. I think if you try it out of curiosity and you're genuine and respectful and curious, maybe it's going to be okay. But I think if you try it just because you feel you should try it, but really, you know, it's not really for you. I don't know what the experience is going to be like. I don't know. I think it can help a lot of people.
Oh, 100%.
I mean, you know, I mean, these studies that show these substances can help with depression, absolutely worthwhile and valid and great. Yeah. So it may be that it's for everybody. I don't know. Certainly for me.
Yeah. Mm. You know, the funny thing is when, you know, I gave up drugs and the use of recreational hard drugs a long time ago. And when ayahuasca started to call, you know, it's funny, it starts to call you. You know, people would say, oh, you know, the forest is calling you. And I'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about, the forest calling? And there was a part of me didn't want to do it because I'd done my partying. And I related the use of drugs,
any mind altering substance.
I've done all that. I've done all my partying, and when I, you know, and then eventually I ended up with a shaman in the Peruvian jungle who sat down with me and just laid my life out in front of me, not knowing a bar of who I was, and I was like, holy shit! And then at the end, she looked at me and said, the jungle's been very tolerant with you. It's called you, and you're not listening. You need to go and listen. So I came home. And that was it. And I went and had my first ayahuasca experience. But the experience of it was very, very beautiful. You know, it was a proper environment with a proper shaman who knew exactly what they were doing and took us on a 22-hour journey with it. And there was a couple of things. When I came out the other side, I was like, wow. And then I was like, so all the other times that I'd been doing it, I didn't realize that this is how I could have been doing it and how deeper I would have gone. And, you know, where in a proper environment with the proper people, the healing mm-hmm. properties that I had were astounding. And I had yeah. next to me people that went into the jungle with stage 4 cancer, spent 7 months there, came out and they were completely clear. You know,
that's incredible.
He was 22 years old. This kid, he was 22 wow. years old. The other side of me was another girl who was dying of cancer. She's passed now. But it's funny just how life sets that up, you know. It definitely, mm-hmm. I don't know whether you've seen The Last Sherman on Netflix. Fantastic documentary. You should check mm-hmm. it out. Okay. It's very, very good.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, The Last Sherman. But it really just nails that whole reality of it. Okay, here's one side of it that can happen. Mm-hmm. Here's the other side of it that can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the mm-hmm. day, you know, it has got its place. And that place is
becoming
very, very prevalent now.
Yeah, I mean, my ayahuasca retreats, I've tried them here in the UK, and it's been with some real good people, you know, in a big yurt, you know,
yeah.
Good people. They know what they're doing. Not too many people.
Yeah.
And I mean, like you say, you come out of that and it's like, wow. And I'm kind of thinking to myself, you know, you got people still like going to pubs and drinking and yeah. fighting and making a mess of themselves. And I'm thinking, these tents, they should be springing up all over the country. That's what we need. We need these tents. Yeah. We need ayahuasca retreats.
Yeah, maybe we're at the start of that right now.
Oh, yeah.
I think so.
Maybe we are.
I think so.
Hey, Dick, you know what? We have to run. I have mm-hmm. absolutely loved
it.
This conversation with you.
Thank you. Magic. Thank you.
Really, really cool. Can I just ask you to finish off with something?
Sure.
If you could give our listeners, me, a piece of advice from your life and from your experience, what would it be?
Piece of advice from my life. I would say curiosity about the unknown can bring rewards,
rewards.
It. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your
Dick.
Time. It was great.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. All the best.
Thank
See you.
Bye.
Take care, pal.
Bye-bye.
If you found this information inspiring, make sure you subscribe and tune in to the next Dorothy and the Dealer podcast.